to another edition of The Exchange, presented by Confederation Group. As always, joined by co-host Blake Doyle. I'm Sam McPhail, and we're back to share some good news, hopefully. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's always, everything's good news, and there's good news in the market. I think there's an acknowledgement that, you know, I write about it a little bit in the article this week in The Guardian, but, you know, with the warmth of the sun comes the opening of the economy. And I think the economy has opened in a gradual way. And the truth is, as soon as things warm up, people are going to, you know, not isolate as much as they had been. I think it's hard to contain that much longer, but as a consequence, we are opening. So it's good news. You can't suspend the economy.
And as Dr. Morrison and the Premier both kind of said, they might start to ease up a little as of May 1st, whatever that looks like. Obviously, you're not going to open bars or anything where people can congregate, but I think they could do, maybe if it was golf courses, to kind of places you could social isolate or social distance, sorry, but that it's not forcing, like if you were to have a concert or something, obviously you can't social distance very well in that sense.
There's a lot of people that want to fish and there's social distancing there. It's funny. I've had a few feedbacks on that statement. I'm not a trout fisher. I have done it, but I'm not passionate about opening day.
I don't have the patience.
I mean, a lot of people fish, but if you can't work, you know, should you be fishing? I think we've locked everything down and now it's good. Some things can start to relax and that's hopeful. So
I think
good.
That's what we'll see May 1st is like just the more, not hobby things, but things that to kind of, a lot of other jurisdictions are doing it. And it's good for mental health too, just in terms of getting out, even if it's lessened or like the time restraints, but it's still better than nothing, I guess.
So we, you know, just to jump into this a bit, Sam, we have, you might say a political colleague, I might say a political adversary. I mean, you guys could be competing against each other at some point in your political.
There's been rumors spread, actually. I was talking to Robert Giz earlier this week, and he said it'd be Ronnie McPhee, Sam McPhail, the next Liberal leadership. So whether that happens or not. But it was nice. We did have Ronnie McPhee on. He works with the city of Charlottetown now, but formerly we worked together for the past Liberal government. I guess it was a year ago today, actually, that the election happened, and we were given the boot by the voters, but that's okay.
It's like you're waiting for me to sort of add commentary.
Oh, I figured you were going to stick it. Yeah. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be working with you. So I guess that's true. One positive out of it.
You know, change is good. Change is good. And these are very interesting times. I'm sure nobody probably would have elected or selected themselves to govern during this crisis. But you know, say what you will, the government, I think, are doing as good a job as they can with the hand they've been dealt and the depth that they've got to get through this. So, you know, I think the fact things are opening up is positive.
I would have to agree. And it's hard to, it was like, I guess some people might've been shocked at the election last year, but it's kind of going against historical trends. And it was kind of, they would say the conservatives to the PC party's election to lose, if they were to lose last year, but they were able to gain a minority government and then win the deferred election seat in the summer too.
All good. It's good. Good for democracy. And here we are. So we've got you. I mean, anyone watching this or listening can certainly size up Sam and Ronnie and sort of make your decisions on who is going to run.
Futures bets.
Yeah. If they, in fact, choose politics or even a political party, who knows what's going to happen. You know, we didn't touch on it today, but there's been a lot of comments on what's going to happen to democracy and capitalism. And, you know, is this COVID situation going to change the functions of government? We already have a minority situation here in the province. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting things will happen in the months and years to come.
And during a crisis, oftentimes governments look like the good guy, regardless of what happens, because they're putting the best interests first of their voter base or their constituents. Because there's not that there's nothing else they can do, but the only way to kind of keep the economy thriving, keep the well-being of the citizens thriving is through a stimulus injection, whether it's direct money or money to their businesses or money to different causes that they care about and they're passionate about.
So, you know, that's an interesting point. Now, you know, I'm going to be affected by the spending spree that we're experiencing, which I think is at some level is necessary. I don't know if they're stimulating the right areas. I think the demand curve needs to be stimulated more than they are, but regardless, you are going to have to pay for this and Ronnie is going to have to pay for this for a much longer period. So I don't know how you guys feel about that, but you mentioned a crisis. So in a crisis, you know, have you looked at anything as far as how opposition parties kind of survive a crisis? Cause they're, for the most part, if they're not putting their foot in their mouths, they're pretty silent. any observations on how opposition parties or governments
It's funny you ask that. I actually did a bit of thinking and research over the past couple of days, and I published an article on my LinkedIn page just on how crises present opportunity for governments around the world, and especially here in a Western economy, whether it's Canada, PEI, locally, or even in the United States. So during a crisis, governments are often, like I said, the protagonists because they're giving money out. They're doing what they're elected to do, putting the best interests of their constituents first. And that's what they always should be doing, but it's more evident during a crisis because all eyes are on government. And if you go look at a Facebook page, all of the Facebook postings, in terms of what government's giving out, people are all high praises, I agree with their comments. They need to be, but at the end of the day, they are just doing their job, what they're elected to do, putting the best interest first. Historically speaking, after a crisis, you will often see that the governing party's approval ratings will either, or the individual leaders will kind of skyrocket. And that's because they spent the last number of whether weeks or months helping out the citizens and giving them what was needed. But it also provides kind of a forced muzzle on opposition parties because if they do speak up, they just look stupid. And Andrew Scheer's proved that a couple different times the last couple weeks. Even Peter McKay, leadership hopeful for the Tories, says, and we've seen locally on PEI some MLAs that spoke out, and maybe they should have just stopped for a bit. Basically, what opposition parties should do in a situation like this is agree with government as much as they can and just get out of the way, because there's no time for politics in a time of crisis. It needs to be just focus on the people, focus on getting the programs in place. There will come a time to criticize down the road, whether it's 6 months from now and we can kind of see the effects or the impacts of the programs put out, whether it's like the financing for small businesses or the stimulus checks, whether it should have been more, whether it should have been less. But right now is not the time to politicize it. So opposition parties just kind of have to sit back, and unfortunately they won't be able to do much about it, but just sit back and wait for it to be over with.
The Liberals are a little bit on their heels anyway, because they are kind of pending some sort of a leadership sort of process. So that makes it challenging. I think from the government's perspective and from my observation, I've got no connection there, but I do think that people would probably feel that the government and the premier have resonated very well as a calm and stabilizing voice. Once we got the period of isolation, I think he's been very public and active. And I think this will probably serve him very well.
Exactly. And they're putting the right moves in place. And I can't say I disagree with any of the things they've done, because again, it's helping out the people who voted them in. Whether you voted for them or not, you're still a citizen of the Prince Edward Island. Whether that be, we talked about before we hit record, the Auditor General kind of having her in place to say, are we doing everything okay? Is this passing the test in terms of being audited? And also they're starting to target more key industries versus kind of the general public. So I think now they're taking matters into a little more precise and a little more transparent too.
Yeah, there's certainly political strategy there. And I think demonstrating the bench strength with some of the ministers and having them step up and get a bit of a profile through this is maybe accidentally has been a very good strategy, but you see some strong ministers kind of emerging through this. So
I agree. And then you might even see ministers that we haven't seen yet that you're thinking, where are they? Why aren't they contributing to the table? But it's been a phrase for the last probably 15 years that is never waste a good crisis. And that can be whether it's economic crisis, health crisis, or like a global crisis, anything. It presents opportunity, because the opportunity is that governments can do things they never thought were maybe possible. And that's, say, funding certain areas that need funding, or just put measures in place that you wouldn't have even thought of whenever things are going good. And you don't want a crisis to happen, but if it does come around, government should be prepared to make the best out of it, because it does present an opportunity.
Well, and this came fast. I mean, I think everybody knew that there was something happening in China, but the rate at which this viral impact, which turned into a financial impact and now maybe a geopolitical impact, I don't think anyone could have planned that it would have had such a dramatic, widespread effect, even on a small place like PEI. So a little bit slow, but certainly got organized pretty well under the circumstances.
And PEI is doing the right things, don't get me wrong. And we're kind of like the testing ground, as we are for most things, to say, okay, are these procedures we're putting in place are working, and we're not having new cases. And we've had one case over the past couple weeks. Most of them have, if not all, have been cured at this point too. and that maybe knock on wood so that nothing else happens, but it's looking good in terms of what procedures we're doing.
You know, one thing I did read, and I'm sure other people have seen this as well, that the Spanish flu, which is the 1918 flu, I think when the first wave hit, 2 to 3 million people were affected. But then the second wave, when it hit, it was substantial, like 50 million people were affected. So this virus, unfortunately, is with us for 24 months until we can have a vaccine. So just because we get a relaxation today and people get out of doors and the isolation isn't as great and we come back together in the fall, there's a pretty good chance this will recur. So we've got to be vigilant. We have to listen to the our leadership and take their guidance when they provide it.
And like you said, the nicer the weather gets, the more people are going to go want to go walking or biking or golfing or fishing or doing whatever they can to be not inside. So I think it's important that especially the big like city centers, whether it's the grocery stores or the pharmacies, we still have to practice your social distancing and lessen, or I guess liquor stores are probably even more, even busier, but just make sure that we're doing the same thing. Don't just give up because things look good, because that it's often can be misconceived.
Yeah. And be responsive. If governments see an issue percolating, let's react responsibly. Let's make sure that the citizenry of PEI are responsible and they take that advice, which they did this time. So, well, and speaking of taking advice of government, we're looking forward to hearing you and Ronnie banter to future politicians. I don't know. We didn't make any announcements of potential runs.
No, but you said you might, but no, that's that.
That would be horrendous.
Anyways, no, we will turn it over to our interview with Ronnie, one of my closest friends. And we've been basically along the line of my short time in politics. We were together kind of all that way through, whether in actual physically working together or as a kind of a mentor perspective. Anyways, we'll now flip it over to our interview with Ronnie. Here we are, probably the most awaited interview yet. We are here with my close personal friend and community liaison officer for the city of Charlottetown, Ronnie McPhee. Welcome, Ronnie.
Thanks, guys.
Sorry, Blake, go ahead.
No, we've been trying to line up this interview for a very long time, so it took COVID maybe to create an opportunity to get his attention. It's great. Thanks
always
for coordinating.
Always dodging our calls. We could only get him at the Sportsman's on Fridays, but we were unavailable. So I guess Ronnie and I have been pretty close friends for probably the last 6 or 7 years, I guess. He was actually one of the first people I met at my first ever Liberal event, so I guess he might be one of the guiding lights that maybe see the red flag. So I appreciate Ronnie for that. And we've remained pretty good friends ever since. I'm not sure what Blake thinks of that.
But well, I do have, it's certainly red flag. It's what a matador would use. So obviously it's gotten people worked up. I didn't realize you were a liberal, Sam. I kind of don't know what to say.
Yes, sorry it took you this long to figure that out.
You both worked in the past government's office, I guess, and some. Maybe why don't we start with that?
Ronnie could give his kind of. He started a lot earlier than I did, but he could give his little rendition of what he did the past few years.
I may not look it, but I'm only a couple years older than Sam, of course. Yeah. I fell into politics by accident. I didn't really come from a political family by any stretch of the imagination, but it was actually Robert Mitchell who I met at that point in time. I always love to tell the story about when I was in high school. I took political science in grade 11, and I lasted about 2 weeks, and I dropped it. I hated it. I just thought you were watching politicians on TV, all the craziness was happening in the world. I just said, I have no interest in this. They're all corrupt. They're all whatever, but I slowly learned as I moved forward that there's some pretty good ones there too, and that you can actually create change from being included. So it was actually Robert Mitchell who first brought me in. I was working full time at Canadian Tire for 3 years when a Jobs for Youth summer opportunity came up in the government members office. At this point in time, I had found myself onto the executive of the Young Liberals as vice president at that point in time. So I had 8 weeks to kind of play around, make an extra dollar an hour above minimum wage. I was had full intentions of going back to the entire, I had to work full time. I've been on my own since, just after I graduated high school. So I needed the income to come in to pay rent and what have you. So I thought I was going back to Canadian Tire after that 8 weeks, but now I'm sitting here still working in, I guess, the political realm. That 8 weeks have turned into about 6 years. So I'm still waiting to go back to Canadian Tire.
Well, I mean, I think you certainly had good tutelage by a very respected member of the legislature. And in fact, he'd make a great Tory. So maybe we can get him converted. So you moved into the government office, I guess, at that point. How was that experience?
It was kind of cool. So at that point in time, I came in at the end of Robert Giz's tenure. And I'd actually credit Robert Giz resigning to actually, which helped kind of help with my longevity, because there was so much going on with the new leadership, and so all the powers that be kind of forgot that I existed for a little while. So I got to stay as the legislative assistant in the government member's office. So thank you to Robert Giz for that. But what I kind of learned through those 8 weeks to a month leading up, so I started, I guess it was in June and July. So if you really think about it, I was under. I've worked under three premiers since I've been involved in this kind of thing, and they're all different guys, and they're all always have my respect. But I learned a lot, because I got to spend a lot of my time with Robert Mitchell, Richard Brown, Bush Dunville, Buck Watts, and that crew that were in that Sonny Glant, who were in that in the backbench and the government members office. So it was kind of cool to see them, the experience that they guys, all those guys had together. I remember the conversations of them just coming in to, you know, kind of just have some banter, and they pull you into the office and you sit there for an hour and a half, just talking about, I've learned a lot from them. So that was kind of cool. That was probably, even though that was early part of my career, but probably one of the most fun I actually had.
So we had a big reveal here that you also had some colleagues in the government's office, and one of those was Sam McPhail. I'm still a little bit flabbergasted. I had no idea that he was even political, let alone involved with the Liberal sort of organization. But what was your experience with Sam? How was he to kind of work with?
So Sam was good. I mean, I actually really didn't get to work with Sam a whole lot, because when I was kind of coming in, I was when he was coming in, I was slowly making the transition to New Brunswick. So I kind of dodged a bullet there, I think. But from everything that I've heard from the premier and everybody who did get to work with, myself included, he did an okay job.
Yeah, and you can make stuff up, because really, who's going to test it at this point?
And if you need somebody to give you directions throughout the province, this guy has been tip to tip. So I don't need to use Google Maps anymore. I just go right to Sam McPhail.
One of his many talents. Sam, what are you? Pretty silent there. Are you
yeah. So actually, I actually consulted Ronnie on a lot of things, because when he was president of the Young Liberals at one point, and then he became a cabinet assistant, I guess, at that point. So then I was, that was my opportunity of glory to become president of the Young Liberals. So Ronnie and I remained close in that sense. And then he was actually at my, I guess, interview for when I got a government job, and I took essentially Ronnie's job that when he was legislative assistant. I moved into that role for the winter. And shortly after the spring session, I guess, Ronnie had moved to New Brunswick, and we still remained in contact. And then I moved into as Wade McLaughlin's assistant. So it's kind of funny that in the Maritime provinces, two of the four premier's assistants were Ronnie and I. So I don't know if there's much confidence in people if they see us walking together with two premiers, but Ronnie and I have always been able to communicate ideas, and if one of us was kind of bummed out at the time being, maybe we could always rely on each other's support and guidance. Maybe if we didn't agree with what one of our bosses were saying or something, we were able to bounce ideas off each other's head and be able to kind of get through any tough times. So I think we both appreciate our respect and guidance through that. Every time I've had a professional correspondence with Ronnie, it's always been good.
I'd love to chat a little bit about sort of how government is doing this crisis, because it is a bipartisan, pretty unique challenge. And I don't think there's a lot of real partisan activity. It's really trying to get through this issue together. But first, let's talk about your role at the city. So you've migrated from big government now into a smaller government, municipal government. How's that transition been, and what's the different demands you see from the higher level now to the more grassroots level political kind of environment?
That's a good question, and I'm still learning. I mean, it's just about a year since I've been there. I guess May will be my kind of 1 year anniversary from being there. It's a lot of similarities, a lot of things that are different as well. I find, if you want to kind of touch base on during this crisis mode, as a community liaison officer, I'm basically another resource for the public to use. I liaise with the community. So during this time, we've been getting a lot, there's a lot of uncertainty, right? A lot of people, you read what's going on in the news, you don't know how to kind of dissect it. You don't know, you know, should I take everything seriously? Should I not take everything seriously? What do they mean by that? So I'm finding a lot of people in Charlottetown anyways, because, you know, the mayor and councilors are, they are the closest kind of level to the public. They're highly accessible. Their cell phones are on the website. So a lot of my kind of work the past few weeks are responding to emails, corresponding via phone with people who just want to get things figured out, or if they didn't understand anything, because it is highly, you know, sometimes it's overwhelming with all the information that is coming from the province, all good information. They have phone numbers for anything that you really want to get to. So a lot of it is explaining that and pointing them in the right direction. Even though we're a small government, municipally, provincially, there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of forks in the road, a lot of directions that people need, because it can be convoluted at times. So that's been a lot of my work now. And thankfully, since I was at the provincial level, I have a keen understanding of how to kind of navigate the waters with that. So that's been a lot of my time right now.
What are some of the big issues? Like, what, from a citizen's perspective, what kind of concerns are people, you know, just generally, what are the main things that people are having challenge with?
It's everything. So I remember when the province announced the $100 or whatever from the Sobeys gift card. So I mean, even that few days leading up to that, people were saying, okay, well, let's call the mayor and he can let us know. So even that thing, what you needed to do, what the qualifications were, like I think a lot of things in government, and including during a crisis, a lot of things are black and white, but majority of Islanders will consider themselves falling in that gray area. So it's up to people like me, it's up to people like Sam, who kind of know government and how it works, to make sure they can navigate, because they may be looking to one program to say, well, I don't think I qualify here, and they're probably right, but they can look at other ways and say, well, okay, well, tell me a little bit about you and your story, and you might be able to go in another direction. So that's a big piece of what I've kind of done in my whole time in working in politics and government.
And I think the important thing, like, we, not that we have developed contacts, but a sense we have, like, we know who to call to say, okay, this person's in charge of this program, this person's in charge of this, that we can, if someone calls us saying, I have no clue how to go through this, how can you help? It's like, okay, I'll make a call and they'll get more information and get back to you. So I think that's kind of the understand. A lot of Islanders don't understand how government functions. They don't understand, like, let's say the federal, provincial, municipal. So I think having Ronnie in a position at the town that people know that they can call the mayor or they can call a counselor, and then Ronnie will know where to guide people in terms of kind of what government program is, what, how do you access it, and what, who do you call to get to it, instead of, so I think that's, it's a good resource to have in a position like Ronnie's, that you can, you know, a friendly face that you can call that will help you out.
So what, as far as government programs, not, this is probably a question for council. We were very fortunate to have His Worship, Philip Brown on, His Worship Basil Steward, both on the exchange. As far as programs and accessibility, is there anything that people might not be aware of that's the city is offering
through this time?
Yeah, like, most of this is all provincial now, federal based. The provincial taps are turning down, I think, while the federal ones are turning up. Is there anything that's kind of an unknown, I guess, benefit or opportunity at the city that people should be aware of?
Not so much for application programs. Like you said, it's heavily, we are guided heavily by the province and heavily by the provincial government, rightfully so. They're the experts. We are taking our lead from them. But of course, there's things that we've done at the city, and I'll let you know, mayor or councilor speak more to this if you guys have them on in the future. But I guess it's, a lot of it is we're giving people breaks on, you know, like parking tickets and all these other stuff, because we know that the financial times can be tough right now. So as in a separate program, no, I don't think there's anything explicit for this time. But we are council's human. they have considered a lot of this stuff, and they said, well, we need to, we're going to move on from this at some point in time, but people, if the people need a break on, if it's a parking tickets or, you know, how we access applications and stuff now. We had changed the format. We have a bin outside our front doors, and you can do it that way too. So not really, but we're working with the province and pushing their messaging. So if you go to charlottetown.ca, you will find basically every link to the province and the feds. We're just helping get the messaging out because we have quite a following at the city, of course. So the more we push there is what the city is doing.
I think the mayor's quote was the meter hornets. He's given the meter hornets a break.
Meter, yeah. What about, you might not know the answer to this. I'm curious what's happening to development permits. I mean, I guess the functions of government are still operating. So I assume if people are able to make applications, that would continue. What about the rinks? Sam really wants to play. Sam and his dad actually are both big hockey players and they're pretty interested to play on this new ice surface. Is that still kind of something that's being discussed in certain quarters?
I think obviously right now there is a large conversation on that, but I'll leave that to council to touch on. That's for them to discuss. But I mean, rinks are quite important. So yeah, we'll axe that piece because I don't want to get involved in that conversation.
We can't drag you down a rabbit hole. You're too politically astute, but I am concerned with Sam and his dad. They both want to play hockey, so I just want to make sure they've got facilities.
Well, in the winter months, we have that beautiful rink down at the Founders Hall, and they're more than welcome to use it anytime they'd like. If they want to leave Cornwall to come to Charlottetown.
Thanks for looking out for me, Blake. We'll switch gears a little bit. So last week, Ronnie, it was announced that the hospice Dancing for the Stars lineup was announced, and somehow you were picked to show your moves in the fall. Do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown on how that happened and what it's going to happen? What we're going to do?
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, I guess. I mean, I do like to dance, Sam. You know that probably more than anybody. But I would say a month or two ago, they had reached out to the mayor. So they emailed me. So I didn't read the file. I got the email. I seen who it was from. I didn't read the full email. So when I first read it, they want the mayor. And I said, so I talked to the mayor. He said, maybe next year, this is just not a good time with everything going down. So I replied back to them and said, no, the mayor is not interested right now, but he may be down the road. So obviously think about him next year, the year after. Just right now is not a good time. When I didn't read the next one, they said, well, how about you? So when they reached out again, I said, well, no, I already told you that the mayor has kind of, you know, the mayor has said no to this, but I ended up just reading and said, well, what about you? And I said, okay, fair enough. It's a lot of hard work to it, I guess. I thought there's one of the girls who works in at City Hall. Her husband did it last year, so I kind of picked their brain. And I said, you know what? If they took the time to ask me, I guess I can take the time to say yes and do it. So I think it'd be pretty fun. We kind of have a fundraising goal of $5,000 between now and October. And then I'm partnered with Julia Roberts. She owns her own dance academy here in PEI. So I'm going to hopefully learn from her and not step on her toes too much. But actually, the interesting part is her brother is actually a part of the competition. He's one of the other stars, quote unquote. So there's going to be a little bit of a family affair there as well. So hopefully I don't, you know, tear the family up too much.
And we had another star this season is Peter Ben Baker, and he was on the inaugural episode of The Exchange. And another former star was on a couple weeks ago, Jeff Cook. So we have a strong history of Dancing with the Stars on The Exchange.
I was there 2 or 3 years ago. I went to watch, I think Robert Mitchell was one of the stars at one point in time, and I went to watch. It's just such an exciting time, and I kind of forgot about it. And then when I started thinking about it again, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. And so it should be fun. So we were having a call with Juliet this week. Obviously, it's a bit weird time to start dancing and practicing now, but we will figure something out in the next couple of weeks or months when this kind of this COVID thing cools down, and I'll get out and be dancing shoes.
I've seen, you're lucky to get Julia Roberts because I've seen a lot of her movies. She'd be great to be dancing with for sure. But now, so how do you do this with social distancing? And I know it's, from what I understand, it's pretty rigorous. Like it's a grueling sort of fitness regime, I think, to even get up to snuff for this. So with social distancing, are you dancing in front of a mirror? And like, how do you manage this as you come out of this COVID?
So I haven't done a lot of practicing yet. I will admit, I don't have the you know, I live with people and I don't want to, I have my girlfriend, my girlfriend's here too. So I don't want to kind of chase her away by seeing my disastrous moves now. So I'll kind of wait until we're allowed to be in the same room with the professional so she can teach me a thing or two.
So, I mean, this is the first, you just mentioned you have a girlfriend, so you're not going to be on The Bachelor. You're not on this sort of reality show run or anything. Is this a one time?
This is a one time, it is a one shot deal. I don't think I'll be getting called up to do any dancing professionally after this. I will say I was in a musical in high school. That was pretty fun. So, you know, maybe I will find a way into a show at some point in the future.
Into acting. And Ronnie's nickname, Blake, I don't know if you know, is for the last number of years has been Ron Romance. And that's when he was a bachelor for many years, but luckily has had a girlfriend for well over a year now. So up until that point, he was batching it up, and a lot of the girls knew him as Ronnie Romance. So, and even his former bosses called him that too, and still do, I'm sure.
It was always fun that when I was the cabinet liaison, one of the ministers I was responsible for was Heath McDonald, and it was always the running joke around the office that it was Ronnie Romance and Handsome Heath anytime place we went. So it was kind of funny that way, and it was I had a brief DJ career the past couple of years, and that was kind of the name we came up with.
So you've got a repertoire of dancing, music now with DJing. And thespian, you've been an actor, so you're probably well positioned to move into political realm. any interest in getting to afternoon theater down to the legislature?
People ask, that's a very interesting way you ask that question. my answer has always been, two answers, no, but never say never. And Sam can say
I think Justin Bieber's used that quote before.
Yeah, that's true. I think Sam can talk to this too. When you work with politicians, you see a lot that they go through. I mean, if I didn't work in politics, I would have said down the road that I would have loved to do it. But you see a lot of the background stuff. It's the politics that you find on social media now, and the ones that always kind of consumes us isn't the important piece of what they do. It's the conversations that are on the back end that are, like you mentioned earlier, the grassroots politics of, you know, I've seen a lot of scary situations and helping people, going to their house and seeing the kind of living conditions that they're in. That obviously that piece doesn't make all the, that's not the flashy stuff you see on social media and stuff like that. So it's hard. I have a tremendous respect for politicians at any level of government, at any party stripe. I mean, I don't know, never say never, but this where I fall within the network of politics and government is where I'm comfortable most.
Yeah. And just to touch on that, I think it's often joked that it's the craziest ones that get into politics because they're just maybe not all mentally there, but in all seriousness, there's a lot of things that are behind the scenes that no one does see, whether it's helping one person who needs a drug to survive, and it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars, but nobody sees that because they're not in it for making a newspaper article out of it. And a lot of it too, like you appreciate it more because oftentimes, especially on PEI, politicians get criticized over whether it could be anything. Oh, they get paid too much. Oh, they don't do this. They don't do that. But a politician's phone is on 24/7. Their brain is essentially on 24/7. They just find time to sleep when they can, especially in a cabinet or premier's office, cabinet minister or premier's office, because it's an ongoing. You're going 140 miles an hour versus maybe if you're in the backbench, you're going a little different pace. But I think it's easy to criticize when you're in the outside looking in, or if you're in a position that you're off at 4 o'clock every day. But it never stops. So you're always getting, your inbox is always full, and your voicemail is usually always full too.
And I like that part of it too. It is, you know, it kind of gets stressful at times because there is things that when I mentioned earlier with the black and the white, there's people that fall outside of the black, white, and the gray area. So there's some people that we've met with that we've tried to help that we just couldn't, given the circumstances of thousands of different reasons why. Those are the tough ones. But it's the ones that you sit down. I always tell this one when I first. It was kind of like the ebbs and flows of government programs. Of when I was first, it was actually constituents of Richard Brown in downtown. We had, when he was in the backbench when I first started, there was this woman who she was a single mother. she was heavy into drugs and couldn't kind of get that next step forward. So between all the programs of, you know, getting her the help she needed, then getting her into EDA program to get her some work, to get her experience, to get her EI. And then once you have EI, you qualify for your school to be paid for. So in that kind of that one person that we've helped from start to finish, she went from someone who wasn't really doing all that well, you know, to making $25-$26 an hour as a receptionist at a local law firm. So those are kind of the stories I like, and kind of the ones that kind of keeps me going every day.
So I'm hearing some really strong rhetoric from a couple of people on this podcast right now that may have political aspirations. Nobody's really declaring anything. I'll certainly make my intentions known shortly. But let's change gears just a little bit. So politically, provincially, you guys both have some provincial politic experience. I don't. I'm an observer of this realm and frequent commentator. How do you think governments generally are doing to adapt to this situation? So we've got different approaches. The U.S. are opening up states. Canada, federally, are saying nothing's going to change. Provincially, we've done a pretty good job of managing our borders. It looks like things are going to very gradually manage, in a managed way, open up. What are your thoughts? How have government been managing this, and or both you guys, and how have opposition sort of positioned themselves? Because they've been very silent, and maybe that's all you can do in this kind of environment. But how does opposition manage these crises?
I guess I'll start. Because people see, and again, going back to my point earlier, but people calling the mayor's office, and even just friends and family who just know that maybe we'll just ask Ronnie. He should know. I don't know anything usually, but I think it's just one of those things that when I make the comparison to twice last year, I drove between Charlottetown and New York. It only takes a day. So in New York City right now is like a hotspot for COVID-19. So yes, we're doing things well here. I give full ups to Premier King, Dr. Heather Morrison, and their crew. We are doing everything right. I mean, we've been dealt a pretty terrible hand here, and they've been doing great. My fear is that we're relatively still close to this hotspot in New York and in the states who are maybe not doing things the way that we would like them to be doing things. So I think internally for PEI, with everything within our control, everything is going smoothly, I think. But again, we're so close to, the hotbed for this stuff. And I'm just fearful that that will find its way back here if we don't, if we don't stay vigilant. And if we ease up too quickly, we are just one drive away from being right into the center of things. So yeah, I think they're doing a great job.
And I think from a political perspective, it's been well noted the last number of years that crises are always not good for government, but it presents opportunity. And governments technically never look bad. Like, there's obviously a little bit of criticizing going on, but governments always look like the good guy, like the protagonist, because they're giving money to constituents. They're fighting for their best interest during a crisis. So it's hard for governments to look bad, quote unquote. And especially opposition parties kind of just have to get out of the way, because there's nothing you can't really criticize right away. You kind of have to wait till the programs go out. But if an opposition is to criticize instant impacts that government's trying to bring forward, they just look silly. And we've seen that actually the last couple weeks over whether it was James Aylward not so self-isolating after his thing, and people, some opposition members coming out and criticizing, but it's hard to criticize government and for them to look bad during a crisis, because they're putting the best interests of our lives first.
In the case of the minister, of course, a lot's changed from the time this situation rolled out until what we know today. You've seen this from actually signing the checks that are going out to people. So there's a less there. He is used at particular circumstance.
Check.
Yeah, we're right. Kind
of lost it. Look at these special warrants that have been authorized situation. And I had a great long tirade. Am I still there?
Yeah, we caught the gist of it. Basically, you're saying that Trump's making himself, he's trying to prop himself up during this through the stimulus checks, because he has the ability to give out free money, essentially. And I think that's how governments do benefit from it. And most often than not, if they do go through a massive crisis such as we're dealing with now, they do see higher approval ratings because they're seen as helping their constituents and their voters at the end of the day.
I'm just looking forward to the day we get back to some normalcy. I can only assume kind of how the opposition parties are doing right now. I think there'll be a conversation with anything. You look back to when we had Hurricane Juan or whatever kind of other similar situations that were kind of stirred up the normal way of life for Islanders. I think there's going to be a larger conversation down the road to reflect on how things were rolled out, just to prepare. And that's all good stuff, because we need to prepare for this to happen again. So we want to, we can learn from this. And I think, fairly speaking, overarchingly, they're doing a great job, and I commend everybody around the table. And I know a lot of them who are working incredible amount of hours going through this. So I know, but that conversation for the opposition to be a part of, where they really come in, will be that conversation that happens after.
Yeah, I agree. And whether it takes a couple of months or a couple of weeks or however long to get back to normalcy, we'll see the impacts of what government's doing now. We won't see that for months down the road, because we don't know what it'll look like. Sure, the economy was shut down, basically halted immediately, but there was still kind of some money flowing through it. But then we won't see the actual impacts of the kind of stimulus injection until down the road. That's probably a good place to kind of cut our ties with Ronnie for today. We appreciate your time coming on, and hopefully sooner rather than later, we'll be able to go out and enjoy a nice beer on the deck somewhere. But until then, we'll do it virtually.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you very much, guys, for what you do. I don't think there's anything similar like this on PEI. So kudos to you guys for doing this. I listen to it every time. One of my favorites, the one that's today, was Jeff Collins. That guy is full of wisdom. So sorry to devalue, you kind of took a step down with me there. So I hope you guys can kind of get back up and get some credible in the
future. Oh, for sure. Don't devalue yourself like that.
We pushed above our weight with Jeff.
Yeah, we still don't understand what we talked about with Jeff. Anyways, we thank you again, Ronnie, and we will talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Thank you, everyone.
There you have it, an interview with a good friend of mine, Ronnie McPhee, from earlier this morning. Ronnie talked about, obviously, his role with the city during a crisis, his upcoming Dancing with the Stars performance that comes up in the fall, and also a bit of our shared political background. So we'll see you next time on The Exchange, presented by Confederation Group. Until then, stay safe.